Well, there we go. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation to order, and I'll make an announcement at the beginning. We don't yet have the paperwork on the Dash 33 amendment on House Bill 2198, so we will be waiting a week for that work session. And the Dash 33 is on OLIS, and the comment period remains open. So if you want an opportunity to comment on what made the amendment, and feel free, and that record will remain open. So tonight we have two bills for public hearing, and I will open a public hearing now on Senate Bill 1015. Adam.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1015 was last heard 2 weeks ago. We have Legislative Counsel Mark Mayer here to discuss the Dash 4 amendments.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Mayer.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I prepared the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 1015 after a work group met last week to discuss how to proceed. The work group decided that, if you remember correctly, the last version of this, the Dash 3 amendments, they allowed industrial hemp to flow into the OLCC market system and then to flow back out under certain conditions. The work group decided that that would no longer be how this bill would be put together. And the primary difference is industrial hemp concentrates and extracts. They can be prepared by people who are registered by the State Department of Agriculture to produce and process those types of products. And then they can be sold into the OLCC system under certain conditions. So that is the primary difference between the Dash 4s and the Dash 3s. As a side note, they do contain a new provision toward the end of the bill that basically says that if you're going to sell industrial hemp products or commodities in this state, those commodities and products have to meet the same or substantially the same testing standards as industrial hemp commodities or products that are processed in this state. And that's to basically, I think the proponents will come up and testify, the intent there is to even the playing field with regard to what's being sold in this state. So be happy to take any questions or turn it over to testimony.
Okay, questions from the committee. Okay, thank you very much. Stand by, please. Okay, Rob Bovet, Matt Cyrus, and I think Eric Moreland. You didn't indicate a position on here, but we'll invite you up at this point.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
May we have Courtney Moran join as well?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
She wasn't signed up.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. Won't belabor it. Mark Mayer described the Dash 4 amendments well. I just want to thank Representative Wilson and Senators Przanski and Cruz for the work group as well as the stakeholders, and I think we've come to a pretty good resolution here in the Dash 4. So thank you.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Courtney Moran, and my law firm is called Earth Law LLC, and I am a cannabis attorney. I'm also a industrial hemp lobbyist for the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association. I also wanted to thank the co-chairs for organizing the work group last week, and Adam for coordinating everything with us. We really do appreciate that. Representative Wilson, Representative Fahey, Senator Przanski, Senator Cruz, thank you for all of your insight. Rob Bovet, thank you also as well, and Jesse Sweet for coming together to the table, as well as the other work group members to come to an agreement on the Dash 4 amendments, which will provide a mechanism for industrial hemp farmers to transfer in flower to OLCC processors, as well as allow ODA registered handlers to transfer
just
in
step
oil.
Back from the mic, please.
Oh, sorry.
You.
Okay. ODA registered handlers to transfer in oil, industrial hemp oil, into the OLCC processors, who then can then use that flour or oil to further process it into either industrial hemp concentrates, industrial hemp extracts, industrial hemp commodities or products, or any marijuana items, and maintaining those products through the OLCC system and sold only in the OLCC retail stores. Okay. Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Matt Cyrus, president of Deschutes County Farm Bureau, also here representing the Oregon Family Farm Association. I encourage your support of the Dash 4 amendments. I think we're getting pretty close to having a bill that is going to be good for the hemp industry, and I appreciate your time and attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Not really a question today, but just a thanks to those who have been mentioned so far who have worked diligently to grow the market for industrial hemp. I have a couple of bills, as you know, in Ways and Means right now, awaiting approval that will really put this market in good stead. And so I just want to thank everybody who has done a great job in putting this together. Yeah. I think it's a good opportunity to really lead all of Oregon, but especially rural Oregon, into a level of prosperity that we haven't seen in some time. It puts another crop on the table. And we're just really excited about this. So I'd just like to thank the committee for their consideration. And we are indeed happy to answer any questions that any of you would have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Senator Pruszynski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I also want to thank everyone that participated. I know this is kind of that kumbaya, but it's something that's very important for the industry moving forward, to have everyone on the same page working forward to ensure that Oregonians will have the opportunity to create and move forward in the industrial hemp field. As many of you know, I had the opportunity to bring the first attempt to legalize industrial hemp in the state back in 1997. It only took 12 years to get that done with the help of Senator Dave Nelson. And we had an opportunity to see him on the floor last week, and he was pleasantly surprised to see how far the industrial hemp movement has come since that time. Well, thank you.
I've often accused Senator Pruszynski of being 10 years ahead of his time, and now I'm going to have to change that to 12. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Is Eric Moreland here and wishing to testify?
Hi, everybody.
I'm sorry I didn't indicate the position. I'd first time doing the okay. testimony here. So.
You could put your name on the record.
Eric J. Moreland, located near Wilsonville, Oregon, industrial hemp farmer, growing for CBD oil. I support Senate Bill 1015 100%. I believe you may have seen or have come across the proposed written testimony about a week or so ago. If you'd like to review that or reach out to me if you have any questions. So as far as the stakes at hand for my business, which is a living entity, and you know, a lot of you folks here probably have your own businesses or business experience. Living, breathing entity, why I can't stress enough how much Senate Bill 1015 means to this industry as far as getting to market. Now, it's established worldwide that this commodity is hot. It's on fire. But I can't get it to market right now. So 2018, wow, that's spectacular. It really is. And everybody who's been a part of it and helped throughout the process, can't thank you enough. And you good folks, you good folks have so many terrific problems to solve for our state. And I got one more for you. It's, well, it's past five, but I'm thinking tomorrow, somehow, some way, we could just put a bill right through the legislature and get us industrial hemp farmers immediate access to marijuana processors. lickety-split. I mean, I need this. My business needs this. So many businesses need it. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you. And I assume you're testifying also in favor of the amendments that are the Dash 4 amendments that are being considered?
Yes, I am. And in my written testimony, I see it as a compromise, but it's a very positive one.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Senator Pruszynski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, Eric, could you tell us specifically what is it besides what is being done in the Dash 4s for Senate Bill 1015 that you think we should be trying to consider? We're taking public testimony right now. The bill hasn't and won't be worked until at least next week. And so there's a possibility that we may not be able to do it in 24 hours, but we may be able to come back with something next week in addition to what might be there, depending on what you have to suggest.
That's a terrific question, and I thank you for it. From what I've seen thus far, as far as industry participants, farmers, and representatives of our state, I'll leave it in your hands. I've presented where my business stands and what my goals are, and I rely upon the state to do what's best for the state. So as far as I've been bouncing around on a tractor all day. it's Dash 4s, Dash 3s, I get lost in it, so I rely on the experts, which is you folks and Courtney.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
I see a hand raised. Is there somebody else who wants to testify?
Yes, may I speak to the topic that we just raised?
Yes, come on up.
Thank you.
And put your name on the record.
My name is Bill Sear. I have an OLCC licensed facility and hemp facility. This question was raised by a group of us that were working together in the transition from 3 to 4. And you may recognize my voice from calling in last week to the work group, and I appreciate that opportunity. Thank you. This is a very important topic, and it was raised by several of our members who are members of the hemp industry about getting product to market immediately. And I understand that this is a process, but financially, people are at risk. And that was the underlying reason to really expedite this whole process, speed it up, and as quick as possible allow access to OLCC processors. And for financial reasons, 5 minutes from here, there's a $3 million investment in state-of-the-art extraction facility, hemp handler, hemp industry, and we can't let them die. They are the part of the infrastructure that's going to allow this industry to grow and to prosper. And now's the time to support these people, these members. A few years from now, the borders will probably be open, and our infrastructure and the health in the industry for hemp will really make the difference of what impact we have outside of the state and internationally. So I support speeding up this process, having access to OLCC as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
Oops.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we will bring this bill back next week, and so feel free to put any other comments on the record between now and then. And for now, the hearing on Senate Bill 1015 is closed. And I open a public hearing on Senate Bill 56.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is our first hearing on Senate Bill 56. We have Legislative Counsel Mark Mayer here to discuss several amendments we currently have on OLIS, including the dash 3s, the dash 9s, the dash 15s, 16s, 17s, 18s, 23s, 25s, and 26s.
Everybody got that down? Welcome, Mark.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel, here to discuss the amendments already been enumerated by Mr. Crawford. Although I don't have the dash threes in front of me, I did not know I was going to be testifying to those. Real quickly, as to the other amendments, the dash nines are probably the most complicated amendments in this set. These amendments, as you know, in 2016, we passed a bill that allowed Oregon to enter into a compact with Indian tribes for the purpose of allowing cross-jurisdictional regulation and transfer of marijuana items between the Indian tribe and Oregon. What this bill does is it allows retail stores located in the jurisdiction subject to Oregon regulations, so in Oregon, not on tribal land, in Oregon, allows retail stores in Oregon that have product coming to them from, pursuant to that compact from the tribe that they're selling, it allows them to collect a refund against taxes imposed under Oregon law against those items. And then finally, this is the important piece, up to the extent that those marijuana items have tax liability that they carry with them as imposed by the tribe. So just to give you a short example, if an item is processed on an Indian tribe or by an Indian tribe, and the Indian tribe imposes on the processing of marijuana in that jurisdiction a tax, and they collect from it, and then that processed item is sold in Oregon, the retailer in Oregon can get a refund from the Department of Revenue up to the extent of the tax liability. Okay, so it's not going to be a refund in excess of that. It'll be a refund up to that extent. The purpose here, of course, is to ensure that these items are not doubly taxed, and that there is, again, this is a policy point, but there's more of a level playing field as to how these items are sold in Oregon itself. So that's the dash nines. The rest of these are a little bit easier to discuss. The dash 15s allow for samples of non-psychoactive topical products to be provided at trade shows and other events. I think the important thing for you to consider as a policy matter is that these are non-psychoactive topicals. I'll move on from there and I'll allow the proponents to describe that in a little bit more detail. The dash 16s allow for long-term care facilities, in accordance with rules adopted by the Department of Human Services, to deliver and administer non-psychoactive topical products to residents of the facility. And again, I'll let the proponents of that amendment discuss it in more detail. The dash 17s direct the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to develop and update periodically a web-based searchable inventory of marijuana producers licensed by the commission that have entered into the bump up that have decided to bump up their canopy limit for purposes of providing free product to patients. It creates an inventory of those people so that the patients can go to the commission's website and presumably look up where to get the free product. And I'll let the proponents further describe how that is going to work in the real world. The dash 18s, these were requested specifically by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and what they allow is they clarify that the commission can immediately suspend a licensee's license for purposes related to diversion. There is a legal difference of opinion as to whether or not the Administrative Procedures Act with respect to agencies being able to immediately suspend licenses for public health and safety reasons would apply in the case of diversion. What this statute does is it clarifies that, yes, they do, or you think that currently the statute does not, then it sets the standard that they can immediately suspend a license for those purposes. The Dash 23 amendments are another sampling. The Dash 23 amendments allow small producers of marijuana that are licensed by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, small producers, so micro-tier producers. They allow them to engage in processing of cannabinoid concentrates if the process is mechanical in nature or an extraction process involving only water. So these are very rudimentary type of processing procedures, such as like grating the trichomes off of a plant or using an ice bath to create the concentrate. I believe there's people who can speak more specifically about the science behind that works. The Dash 25s are another sampling amendment or another provision of samples amendment. What these amendments do is they allow samples of any marijuana item to be provided at a trade show or event, so not just non-psychoactive topicals, but any marijuana item, so long as a couple conditions are met. The first condition is if you're going to engage in this activity, you have to register with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The second point is that you have to pay a fee adopted by the commission if you're going to engage in this activity. There is a specification that the provision of samples are subject to any law or rule governing the sale of marijuana items in this state, except as explicitly exempted by the commission. So obviously, certain things that can only occur in a retail store location will be exempted out, but all other types of laws and rules governing those transactions will apply. And then finally, a person who is affiliated with the event itself, not necessarily a licensee, but the person who's affiliated with the event itself, they have to provide the commission with a plan for how somebody cannot exceed, I'm going to call it the 1 ounce rule. In statute, you cannot have more than 1 ounce in a public place. This would make it so that you would have to submit to the commission a plan whereby that will be enforced so that people can't go to different vendors, get different samples, and get more than an ounce or an amount of marijuana item extract or concentrate that correlates to 1 ounce of usable marijuana. So those are the Dash 25 amendments. And then finally, the Dash 26 amendments. These amendments allow certain service providers by order of the commission to process and keep records of monetary transactions between licensees if they meet certain qualifications. And I am woefully unqualified to discuss this particular amendment, so I ask that you probably direct questions on this one to the proponent. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Questions on this? Could you go over just one more time how the tribal tax fund system would work? You start with the grower on the reservation, and then it goes to a dispensary that's off the reservation. And could you just go again?
Is that the Dash 9s?
Yeah, it's the Dash 9s.
Yeah, the Dash 9s. Yeah. Chair Burdick, that's correct. So first, the marijuana would have to be either produced or processed or both on tribal land. Then the product would have to be transferred pursuant to the compact into Oregon and sold through an OLCC licensed retailer. That product would then be subject to our retail tax, 17%. If a tax is imposed by the tribal government on the processing or the production of marijuana on tribal land, that tax liability can be collected by the marijuana retailer as a refund to offset the cost of the tax to offset the imposition of the sales tax. So for simple numbers' sake, let's say that the tax on the production of marijuana by the tribal government was roughly equal to 15% of the retail price of the item. The marijuana retailer who sold it would then be able to apply to the Department of Revenue for a refund for up to 15% of the tax, not the full 17%, but up to 15%. Because
a refund, it goes to who?
It goes to the retailer, because the retailer is passing. The retailer is the person who's collecting the tax from the consumer and then turning it over to the Department of Revenue. So the idea is that the product is already costing much more because it's taxed by the tribal government. That tax is inflated, the tribal government's tax has inflated the cost of the item, and the 17% tax that's imposed by Oregon law, a refund can then be requested by the marijuana retailer to offset the inflated cost of the item that is there because of the tax liability that is carried forward.
So the way it would work is the 15% would be taxed by the tribe, and the tribe would keep all 15%.
Correct. They're going to impose their tax and collect it, and they're going to have their 15%.
Right. And so their product is higher priced.
Correct.
So it gets into the dispensary, and then the dispensary gets a refund. The dispensary sells it with a 17% tax on top of this
high-priced
item, and then what happens?
And then they can request a refund from the Department of Revenue for purposes of offsetting the cost of the item that is to offset whatever the tribe taxed, basically. But it cannot exceed, the important thing here is it cannot exceed the tax liability imposed on the item by the tribe. So then
you would have an effective, in this example, you'd have an effective tax rate of 2% that would go into the formula for distribution under the formula.
That is correct, Chair Burdick.
Senator Prusansky, did you?
I got that, but I think I want to go over it again, because what I'm hearing is that it's assumed that the Warm Springs, since this is the only compact we have, they will be putting some type of a tax on that product. Then it's assumed that once they have done that, they will, and that's going to be from the grower or the processor who's done this on Indian land, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then at that point, we assume that that has now been built into the cost of when they go to sell it and transferred into the state system, that's what they're going to want. And so there's potential, I'm not sure if there's going to be a willing buyer on the state side at that cost. I mean, it's pretty much like when we look at the medical program for those who want to sell in excess up to 20 pounds into the market, they have to have a willing buyer. And we, at this point, we have the establishment that it's going to be either a wholesale, OLCC wholesale licensed person or a processor that will be buying it. And I think that's part of that market. We just don't know what is going to be a willing buyer's willingness to pay for it. But to say they do pay whatever is the asking price from the tribe, then they would be able to offset whatever that amount is, and then you'd end up with only 2% going into the
right
system.
And so I guess the overall question is, for whose benefit is the formula, the taxes under the formula, for whose benefit is that intended? Is it intended, I think it's intended for the consumers. So it's a complicated issue, but thank you for running us through it.
All right.
Okay, we will start out now with the representatives from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Eugene Green, Louis Pitt, and joined by Michael Mason.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs Burdick and Leinagers and members of the Joint Marijuana Regulation Committee. My name is Eugene Austin Green, and I am the chairman of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Tribal Council. The Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon support Senate Bill 56 with the Dash 9 amendments, the Tribal Cannabis Tax Equity Bill. The amendments would correct an oversight in ballot measure 91 as amended to address the regulatory burdens imposed on tribes by the state of Oregon's legal marijuana marketplace. We have made progress in correcting ballot measure 91's omissions of tribes in 2016. The legislature passed House Bill 4014, which authorized the governor to enter into intergovernmental agreements with the tribes to address the coordination and enforcement of marijuana related businesses licensed by the tribes to conduct business on tribal trust lands. Warm Springs has since finalized an IGA with the state of Oregon and is advancing the licensing and development of a tribal membership approved cannabis enterprise. The tribe's referendum passed with 86% of the vote, reflecting the dire need for economic development in our community facing very high unemployment. Our economy has only worsened after the closure of our Warm Springs lumber mill last year after 50 years of operation. The state law also imposes a retail tax on all items sold at state retail stores and then map out in detail how that tax is allocated. This allocation wholly omits Oregon tribes, even though the state program impacts tribes in a number of ways, including public safety, public health, and education. For example, Warm Springs provides direct mental health, alcoholism, and drug services and prevention and intervention programs to its membership and others residing on the reservation. Jefferson County and Wasco County provide only de minimis services for members living on the reservation. The legalization of marijuana in areas surrounding the tribe's reservation will impact the nature and extent of services on the reservation. In addition, the tribes provide direct law enforcement services on the Warm Springs Reservation. Highway 26 is a high incident drug activity corridor and it is a major highway between Western Oregon and the localities in Central Oregon. Legalization of marijuana in areas surrounding the tribe's reservation will impact the nature and intent of law enforcement services on the reservation. Indeed, the tribe has formed a civil regulatory administrative agency that will, with the Warm Springs Tribal Police, work hand in hand with the state of Oregon, the state and local police to properly administer and enforce applicable law on and off the reservation and as agreed to in the intergovernmental agreement between the tribes and the state of Oregon. Because House Bill 4014 did not specifically address taxes, a new amendment is necessary to address tax issues. The Dash 9 amendments do not address every interest of Oregon tribes, which are each unique, but is intended to equitably address taxation of marijuana items where such items have been regulated and taxed by tribal nations. The bill proposes a rebate of state taxes where a retailer is selling items that have been either produced or processed or both by a tribally licensed business and which have been taxed by the tribe. The amount of the rebate cannot exceed the tribal tax levied and is proportionate to the tribal activity associated with the production processing of the item. The amendment does the following. It is consistent with well-established judicial precedent related to taxations of on-reservation activities. It recognizes tribal regulatory interests in marijuana-related activities associated with the state marketplace. It equitably addresses tribes who opt into cannabis regulation in coordination with the state program. It prevents the possibility of double taxation by tribes and the state of Oregon, which may harm the state marketplace and tribal economic and community development, consistent with the policy of Oregon stated in the Reservation Enterprise Zone Tax Credit first passed in 2001. It facilitates the collection of tribal taxes on tribally developed products to serve important tribal government interests. In summary, while Oregon tribes have not engaged in cannabis regulation or in the cannabis industry, Warm Springs believes that the tribal cannabis tax equity bill provides an equitable foundation to advance tribal interests as the state market and tribal regulatory participation matures. Thank you for considering the Dash 9 amendment to Senate Bill 56 and the opportunity to address you today.
Thank
you.
That is my statement.
Madam Chair, Committee, I'm just here to compliment, the chairman on his good work and that any questions that you have in the filling up the gaps here. Louis Pitt, Jr., Director of Government Affairs and Planning.
Thank you.
So any questions you may have that he can't answer or Michael can't answer, like maybe I might.
Michael,
that would be a long list, Madam Chair, at least on my side. So my name is Michael Mason, for the record, and I'm a lobbyist for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, and here basically to answer questions. I think the one thing to clarify, though, is that you talk about the imposition of this tax and trying to track it. I think the plan, as I understand it, under the IGA that the tribe currently has with the state, is to have a dispensary or a store, so to speak, that the tribe would run. So it wouldn't be a situation of the product from the reservation going out to, say, 20 or 50 different outlets that would you'd have to then have to deal with keeping track of what taxes paid or collected.
Okay. If I could just ask you a question, I'm not sure you'll know the answer, but in the structure that we have now, local governments have the authority to have an optional 3% tax on top of the 17% state tax. Under your compact, do the tribes have that ability, or is that the wrong?
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Burdick and members of the Joint Marijuana Committee. It's my understanding that the compact doesn't address taxes in any regard.
So as a sovereign nation, you have the ability to tax as you see fit.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be true.
Okay. Other questions? The other question I had after talking to you today, I want to thank you for coming to visit with me, is whether a better structure might be to find some way to put the tribes into the allocation formula that we have now. Like the formula goes out to education and to the various functions, and to find a way to include the tribes in that distribution formula. Because what I'm hearing you saying is that right now you get no distribution from the formula. Is that your understanding?
Yes, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, that is our understanding.
But the county,
we're not listed at all in Measure 91 or right. Any of the subsequent legislation. Yeah.
But the counties that you operate in, I guess it'd be really confusing if your reservation is included. I don't know what the status of Jefferson County is, whether they're an opt-in or opt-out county. But if they have not opted out, they are included in the distribution formula. And yet you're a sovereign nation within that county and are not included. Senator Pazansky, please help me here.
Yeah. Madam Co-Chair, I think this is one of those ones that we probably would definitely need legal counsel, because since this is a compact, I'm just not sure how that works as to then putting the tribe into a distribution formula. I definitely would want to see what, if any, other areas that we've had where that type of accommodation has occurred, because it seems to me that we could potentially be setting up with good intentions, but something that may not be appropriate or proper.
Okay. We just had enter the room a revenue specialist and our lawyer, so it might be...
The lifelines have come.
The lifelines have come, so it might be good to call them up after we're done questioning you and see if they can elaborate on this. Does anybody else have any other... Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Did I understand one of you to say that perhaps a preferable model for you would be to simply have your own retail outlet in various jurisdictions?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
And do you see that as being feasible to have it solely, in other words, you'd be the only supplier for a dispensary? Because as I understand it, you don't want one on the reservation. You want one, an OLCC-licensed dispensary that you would run. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so if it was only your product that was in there, is that what you're envisioning?
That's how I understand it.
Mm-hmm. So it would be horizontal, and it would be a recreational retail license, not a dispensary, just so we make sure the records
are... I'm sorry, recreational retail license.
That's right.
I do get
that's
my
correct.
Terminology.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah.
And that sort of arrangement is allowed in the compact, I believe, so.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
We'll hear from our revenue.
Okay.
Our revenuers here.
Co-Chair Burdick, Madison Malik, Legislative Revenue. Sorry for the short sleeves, but
it's all right. It's
have
summer.
To do. I understand that you had a particular question about how the taxation working for the sovereign tribes, right? Is that
right? And the question I had is whether there was some way under the compact. You're probably not the person to answer the legal questions, but just as a matter of administration, whether there's some way to include the tribes in a distribution formula instead of this rebate system.
And Co-Chair Burdick, the interesting thing that this would happen is, of course, as a sovereign nation, whether the county that the sovereign nation is in opts out or does not opt out, it doesn't matter if the sovereign nation chooses not to opt out. And therefore, so the basic premise that you started with is if a county opts out, then it doesn't get the money. That is out of the window kind of thing. So... And it's not a political subdivision of the state. That's number two. So it is not included in this umbrella of distribution. However, the legislature is supreme in this matter, and they could choose to, if they want to, allocate an amount of, but not necessarily in the same way the distributions for the city and county as political subdivisions of the state would work.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, Mark Mayer, Legislative Council. The way you would probably draft the concept that Mr. Mazin just described would be to create a hook in the distribution formula for monies to flow to tribes using whatever kind of language you wanted to create, for lack of a better term, sideboards for the distribution of the funds, but create a hook using the section of law passed in 2016 that created the ability to enter into a compact. So something along the lines of, pursuant to the terms of an agreement entered into under such and such section of law, monies may be used for such and such purposes, and specifying them to be distributed underneath that specific, those specific terms. But then that would probably be the simplest way to do it. Anytime money flows outside of our jurisdiction into another, though, it becomes a pretty complicated writing process, or a pretty complicated process that could be handled either in statute or it might be handled administratively through the distribution of the funds according to certain guidelines imposed by the legislature. So, okay.
Representative Leininger.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank the representatives from the Warm Springs Tribe, the tribal chair, for coming and talking to us. That's really important to hear from you and how we can be of service. I would like to add that if there is a way to honor the specific request that that the tribe made in the manner in which they made it, I feel like out of respect for the sovereignty of the government and the tribal nation, it would be good for us to try to take that approach. I don't feel like I have a clear sense of whether this horizontally integrated structure that we heard described, whether that would be with the tribe doing the producing and processing on the reservation, I believe, and the sales at a fully tribally operated and owned site off the reservation, if that would be somehow prohibitively difficult to capture tax revenue from and return to the tribe. I mean, I think that the main point I'm trying to make is that if we, I feel like the out of respect for the sovereignty of the tribe, we want to try to negotiate this in a manner that does our best to give life to the thing that they're trying to do in the way in which they're trying to do it. So if you could, if not now or at a subsequent meeting, let us know kind of the relative difficulty or administrability of the different paths, that would be helpful as we try to process that request.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ferriero.
I just can't resist. I think we're all overthinking this. Mm-hmm. First of all, the tribes are not asking for a distribution. So the idea of building a compact and building a requirement for a distribution back to tribal members isn't a question. It might be an inspiration, but it's not something they've asked us to do. The second thing is that they're simply asserting that products that are produced on tribal lands, if they are sold in an outlet off tribal lands, are not taxed by the state of Oregon. That's where the sovereign nation issue comes in. They're also saying that if products that are produced off tribal lands are sold in a tribal outlet, that they would expect to pay 50% of those taxes. And that, I think that's clear in the bill. I don't want us to overthink this. It just seems like we're trying to complicate an issue that's relatively simple. It is based on sovereignty, and it's based on the idea that tribal interests shouldn't be taxed by the state of Oregon when those products are sold. That's what I get out of the amendment. Anybody want to try and make sense out of that?
Well, Co-Chair Ferrioli, I'd have to look at the details one more time. I mean, if the idea to have the product that is produced in a sovereign, under the sovereign nation jurisdiction and then sold in the same way, there are everything else that we tax that we does not apply in on these type of situations anyhow. So a cigarette tax, even the gas tax or the other types of the liquor tax, does not work in the same way that works outside the tribal lands. Now the one thing that I understand that might be a little complicated in this is that having the store outside the tribal jurisdiction. So does that is probably new. Doesn't mean it cannot be sold or found a way, but we're not necessarily used to that.
Senator Ferriero.
Krasinski. That's a lot like me, yes. But just one,
you can see
one seat over.
Yeah. So I was actually going to ask Senator Ferrioli, on the last part of that, I understood and I agree with it. It seems like that would be a much simpler way and be more traditional. The part about the tax, though, if they took in product that was produced by an OLCC grower So it's off tribal land that where it's going, and it comes in for sale. It seems to me they would be required to tax at the full amount, just like any other retail outlet, that they wouldn't be able to discount that, because if that happens, then I think we're looking at potentially those who are in the market thinking, well, we should just try to get everything into a tribal retail outlet. Yeah, I can. I think that you're right as to how that would work, but that 50% doesn't seem like that would be an unfair advantage for in that setup if you were taxing at OLCC retail outlets the full amount, but discounting the tax at another location.
Senator Pruszynski, there are different ways that the taxes are used. I think cigarette tax is not applied while, let's say, fuel tax is refunded. So there are mechanism of you could tax everything at the top and then use a refund mechanism to for the tribes. Now, in that sense, the price to the consumer on the front, it's all the same because you have not reduced it from the price from somewhere else. It is at the back end where the process of refunds happen, is when you either refund fully or half or partially or so on. And that's a decision that, of course, depends on what you decide.
Yeah.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, a definite difference between what's produced by the tribe and what they may buy through the normal market. And, you know, and I think the focus at this point is the tribe producing and being able to have a retail outlet for their own product. Yeah. And I think maybe that's where the focus needs to be at this point. We may need to take this kind of a step at a time a little bit here. So
I think, isn't it fair to say that if the retail outlet were limited to only product from the tribe, it would be a lot easier to mm-hmm. avoid yeah. some of the problems Absolutely. That Senator Pruszynski was.
Madam Chair, yeah, agreed. I think that makes the most sense. It's relatively simple. It seems to me that one of the biggest problems is just determining how many outlets there would be, or knowing how many outlets there would be. But if anything is simple, and of course nothing here ever is, that just seems to be the best way to go, having their own outlets with their own product exclusively.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll start through some of the other amendments. We will call up Rob Bovet, Les Helgerson, and Jeff Sugarman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. I'll talk very briefly about five other dash amendments. First one's going to be real easy. The dash twos are probably moot now because they are baked into, no pun intended, the dash 33s for 2198, which if you move, then that takes care of the 1,000-foot rule cleanup that we need. The dash threes, which is the hotlines for cities and counties, is a good amendment in our opinion, but it needs to be fixed. Andre also put on OLIS some interesting testimony that clarifies that they actually won't work as written. So we need to rewrite the dash threes to make them actually work and accomplish their goal. And then I'll just mention real quickly the dash 23s. I really appreciate that's the amendments that would allow small OLCC producers to mechanically or cold water process concentrates as kind of a primary processing for their small farm. I'm very pleased that I was allowed to work with the proponents on that and get you a good amendment that you can consider that was workable. So the dash 23s are good to go as well. The two that I'm kind of struggling with right now, and the last two that I'll mention, are the dash 25s and the dash 15s. Dash 25s, of course, would allow distribution of samples at trade shows, and that would kind of break our closed-loop system. And I think if we're going to do something like that, we probably ought not to do it now. Timing really is kind of terrible for this kind of thing when we don't know what the federal administration is going to do about that. So handing out free samples at trade shows, probably not a good idea. I have the same concern about the Dash 15. I understand those are non-psychoactives, but they do come out of our closed-loop system, and I would no longer be able to say, hey, we got a closed-loop system. And I very much want to be able to say that tomorrow and in the future, or at least a little bit into the future. So those are my comments.
Thank you.
Hi, Co-Chairs Burdick, Leininger, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Les Helgeson. My wife and I are managers of Green Hills LLC, and I'm in here to support the Dash 23 amendment. I think having the ability to produce concentrates as specified in the amendment would provide a strong financial incentive for OMMP growers and others to enter the system, and I think it's had a positive impact on diversion issue we're trying to deal with. So it's primarily an incentive to get people to come into the system and work. And in written comments, which I noticed I forgot to correct the date on, so for the record, it's May 23rd. The cost of licensure and so forth for the security requirements and whatnot, it's quite substantial. Having an additional source of income, again, it would attract people into the system and make it more financially favorable. So, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on the process you might have. It's really it really isn't processing. It's no different than trimming flower in many ways. It's labor-intensive. It also doesn't lend itself to large-scale production. Not a lot of people are producing these concentrates to that. So, you know, transportation costs and all that, again, this provides an additional incentive for folks to enter the market. And finally, I'd like to thank Representative Gomberg and his staff for the help in addressing this, and Rep. Leininger, your staff as well. Adam's been very helpful in putting this together, and, of course, Rob Bovet. So I hope we can make this work, and thank you for the opportunity to be here, and any questions I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you.
Good evening, Chairs Leininger and Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Sugarman. I'm here today representing Groundworks Industries. We are a vertically integrated cannabis company. In general, we're in support of the amendments that have been outlined today. I do have one question about the Dash 23 and why it's specifically limited to micro-tier processors. It seems to me that any processors would be able to do that type of work, and would at least ask you to consider allowing any level of OLCC licensed producer to be able to do the same type of concentrates, but we're certainly in support of that idea. The big amendment I wanted to talk about is the Dash 26, and frankly, I just don't understand it. I've read through it many times. I've spent most of the day today trying to talk to a number of people about exactly what this amendment does, and I've heard everything from it's about funny money to all kinds of different things that I really don't quite understand. We really want to be able to use merchant services in our retail facilities. We want to be able to take debit and credit cards right now in our facilities, although we do have bank accounts for all of our licenses. We use ATMs in our shops so that people will pay in cash. We're simply not able to find a merchant services type account. So if this is some avenue down that path, I'd certainly be interested in it. But it doesn't look like that to me as I read through the bill. and I'll just go through section two where it talks about processing and keeping records of transactions occurring between licensees, consumers, and other entities. We just went through a whole legislative cycle about data collection and stripping all kinds of identifying information out of our system, and I don't know if this allows some company somewhere who gets this OLCC service provider order to keep data that we don't want them to keep. So I'd certainly have a question about that. It also looks like it really severely limits the types of providers that are allowed to get this order. When you look at the section 2 sub A, line 16 of the amendment, it says it's a level 1 payment card industry data security standard PCI DSS validated provider. First of all, I'm sure I don't really know what that is, but I Googled it, and there's six different levels of these types of security providers, and the company that determines this, or it's essentially a coalition of credit card companies. I don't know if this is the highest standard of security, or if all of the levels of security that they list are feasible for us as retail operations to use, but it certainly raises the question in my mind that are we limiting the ability of other types of service providers to come into the industry? And that's, I think, enhanced by sub D, section 2 sub D starts on line 21, that says that the company, the business that gets this service order has made more than 20 million transactions in each month during the 24-month period preceding the date on which the commission issues the order. 20 million transactions per month for 24 years sounds to me like a huge company, and there may be service providers that we would want to work with that would not be able to meet that level of transactions. And again, I don't really know what benefit or what detrimental effects that would have on our industry. So does it allow us to use any type of credit card? Does it allow the use of Bitcoin or some type of prepaid card? Is this amendment even necessary for this company or other companies like them to be able to operate in the state of Oregon? So again, the Dash 26, I signed up in opposition just because I really don't understand it, and nobody seems to be able to answer the questions that I've been asking today. So thank you for your time.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I can respond.
Yes, please.
I'd like to try to help.
Thank you, sir.
There probably is only one company at this point that could fulfill all those requirements. It is a company that's currently operating in Ohio, at least the same legislation's passed in Ohio. They're in the process of rulemaking. So I intend to watch carefully what those rules are going to be. The obstacle we have encountered with this business is that banking is not available, not accessible at the present time. Credit unions seem to be able to bank the business, but I'm not sure that that includes direct access at the point of sale locations. I'd like to hear more about that. But what I would like to direct you to do is to go ahead and look at the rulemaking process that's currently going on in Ohio. And I think that may provide some of the answers we're both looking for. The intention of this amendment is to provide some sort of direct access services that allow the consumer and the business owner to transact using the Class 1 type services. That's the intent. We have one example. It's probably a good idea for us to study the example.
Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, thank you for some of that clarification. It still raises a lot of questions in my mind as to exactly what kind of product this company would be bringing into the state and offering us to consumers, whether it's their regular debit and credit cards or some type of other vehicle that they use, some kind of prepaid card. Again, I'm intrigued by it, but I think there's a lot of questions, and it would concern me if there's only one company in the entire country that was able to provide those services.
I'll add this to the record. http://codes.ohio.gov/ORC/379.6.031V1, and it's a closed-loop payment processing system. I'll put that on the record so that you can look up that reference to the Ohio State Code. It'll probably give some of the answers that you're looking for.
Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, thank you. I actually do get the Ohio update, so I'll go back through my emails and see if there's anything in there about this, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Next, we'll have Vince Porter and Nikki Terzio.
Thank you. Yes, this is the sampling panel. Chair Burdick, Chair Leininger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vince Porter. I'm here representing the Oregon Cannabis Association. We are in support of Senate Bill 56. I wanted to specifically talk about the Dash 25 amendment, which does address sampling. The OCA is interested in allowing licensees to market their product in a regulated and controlled environment through trade shows and other similar events. And we, to address Mr. Bovet's concerns, we do have every intention of working with the OLCC to keep the loop closed, and that we would still develop a system that would involve metric all the way through to the point where the sample's in. You know, with the elimination of retaining personal information that was passed earlier in the session, handing out samples would be much the same if you use the metric system all the way to the point of at the event. But we would just want to be on the record. We would absolutely want to work with OLCC to make sure that this was a very controlled and maybe a step, you know, piloted project, so we could investigate and see how samples of producers and retailers' products could be offered up as a way to market their business. So we would appreciate your consideration of the amendment.
Thank you.
Nikki Terzieff here, mostly on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. I will actually, as a proxy for former Senator Bruce Starr, talking about Dash 26, who wasn't able to be here tonight, but I did say that I would be happy to put some of what he thought was on the record for Dash 26. They are clearly supportive of it. They're asking OLCC to check and ensure that any business providing merchant services to the industry meets benchmarks. Those benchmarks are laid out there clearly in Section 2. And Mr. Sugarman also went through and detailed some of those for you. The questions that he does have are probably best directed at other rulemaking states, as well as the direct proponents when they're able to be back on the ground. But the aim here overall is to provide an electronic financial system that establishes some guidelines and baselines that would meet some of the federal standards and requirements and create kind of a softer landing for financial banking here in the state when it comes to cannabis. Accountability for and of the participants in the system, transparency for transactions, and then really, again, aiming to honor the federal and local enforcements for banking. Now, for the three amendments that OCBC is really interested in, we'll talk about the 15-15 amendments, which is sampling. This is, as Mr. Bovet has indicated, non-psychoactive, only topical, not to be inhaled, not to be ingested, only to be placed on the hair and the skin, non-psychoactive. So I suppose even if some teenager got a glob of it in his or her mouth, they would have a pretty strong lavender flavor, but not much else. So we're excited about that. I think that's actually a great opportunity for our state to kind of dip its toe into the sampling pond as a slightly more surgical approach. But I think overall our organizations would agree that maybe this is the next step for the industry. The Dash 16 Amendment, long-term care facilities. What we know about the effectiveness and the efficacy about these topicals, again, non-psychoactive, non-ingested, only for the hair, skin, and nails, topicals, is that they work and patients appreciate them. And so finding an outlet in the long-term care facility for these products to be either dispensed through the pharmacy or made available to the patients who are living in the residences are something that we would support. And so We'd like to see them being able to be used and distributed there. And then finally, the Dash 17 Amendment, which is the OLCC resource list. The aim for this is really to facilitate patients accessing medicine from growers who are with the canopy and the micro tier. The idea is you could opt in, so the grower would volunteer whatever information they would like, inclusive of I give free medicine for veterans, as an example. So the idea, again, being that we facilitate that relationship for patients who maybe don't have their grower and growers who need to because they're opting in disperse of their medicine. We're hoping that this is a good platform for that through the OLCC.
And did you also testify in favor of the Dash 25?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, shoot. You know, I think we want to make sure that there's safe and responsible access. And so what this committee decides that looks like is certainly what we would support. At the baseline, the Dash 15s are non-psychoactive topicals would be what we would support first and foremost.
Questions from the committee? All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Dale Peters-Borth and Anthony Taylor.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I'd just like to do a quick sidebar here.
How about your name?
I'm sorry. Anthony Taylor, Compassion of Oregon. Dale Petersdorf here is the son of my BFF in high school. Mm-hmm. So a generational thing coming along here. I just want to provide a little bit of feedback on the Dash 16s in Senate Bill 56. ORS 475B485 already allows healthcare professionals to administer medical marijuana to patients in licensed healthcare facilities. And 475B419 allows those healthcare facilities to be designated as secondary caregivers. So I think really this, I like it. I love it. This is how they got cannabis into the retail, or I'm sorry, the residential care facilities in California. There are already a couple of residential care facilities, specifically our house in Portland, AIDS Hospice organization that allows their residents to use cannabis, and in fact, their caregivers, Clifford Spencer, who many of you have seen testimony from, takes care of these people, and they're allowed to do capsules, tinctures, flower, whatever it is works best for them. And so I think really the only thing we need to figure out in this is this transition from where a care facility would get it and how. I mean, 2 years ago we had a bill before the body that would allow the residential care facility people to use this on their own. The other thing that pertains to this is the Indoor Clean Air Act, of course. Our house, for instance, some of their residents that use flower have to go off campus to smoke because there's no smoking allowed of anything on campus. So we're really happy to see this. I just think that we just got to figure out how to get it to people that are non-card holders. The legislation 2 years ago would allow anybody in hospice care or with a terminal diagnosis to receive a card automatically. So maybe we could revisit that. But this is really important because there's a lot of us boomers that are going to want to take their medicine into the facilities with them. And we got to make allowances for that. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Welcome.
For the record, my name is Dale Petersdorf, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. Thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Dale Petersdorf. I'm here to speak about some of my associates and their testimony. I'm not here to speak on any particular bill. But what I would like to do is tell you guys a little bit about myself and why I'm here today. My family and I have been Marion County, Salem-Keizer community members since 1994. I'm a veteran of the United States Air Force and proud Oregon citizen and medical marijuana grower. In the 5 years that I've been a member of the cannabis community, I have met some very compassionate, intelligent, and driven individuals whose names I'm sure are going to be familiar here. Pioneer Pete Gendron of the Oregon Sun Growers Guild. My friend Anthony Taylor of Compassionate Oregon. PK of Mercy. And John Sajo of the Umpqua Cannabis Association, to name a few. These individuals and their allies have come before this committee time and time again and delivered clear, intelligent, compassionate, and consistent testimony on behalf of themselves, the patients of Oregon, and the communities they serve, and the respective organizations. These cannabis community sentinels have been steadfast in their message and in their commitment to protecting medical cannabis patients, the fair development of a regulated adult use market, and cannabis and the cannabis industry as a whole in this great state of Oregon. To the members of the committee who have heeded the testimony of these courageous men and women, I thank you. I genuinely thank you. To those of you who have not, I urge you to listen. Recently, PK of Mercy brought up Article 20 of the Oregon Constitution, and it states, "No law shall be passed granting any citizen or class of citizen privileges or immunities which upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all citizens. Laws and regulations that violate Article 20 of the Oregon Constitution are inherently unconstitutional and will do nothing but create economic and social disparity amongst Oregonians and turn otherwise law-abiding citizens into criminals. Please listen harder. Thank you."
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Anthony, I kind of was confused by your message. On the one hand, I thought you were saying the Dash 16 was already being handled by these, that people are already able to do this, that we don't need it. And then I thought I heard maybe we might need something. So would you elaborate?
Yes, Co-Chair Burdick. Right now, any medical marijuana patient have these options. The only people that are in these facilities that don't have that option are non-patients, non-cardholders. So that's the avenue we have to figure out how to get product to those. Whether we do it through an emergency card, and then they become patients, and that facility can become their caregiver, but still remains the issue of getting the product to them. Clifford Spencer, for instance, he cultivates and produces all the medicines and delivery modalities for the patients that he's caregivers for, and they're checked right into the med cart. The NARC book is filled out, and it's distributed. The capsules specifically are distributed, you know, morning, noon, night, through the med nurse, and they're supplied by the caregiver. So that's our challenge here, is to get these products to non-cardholders.
Okay, and this amendment doesn't do it.
Okay. It does, in a sense, saying that they have to come through a wholesaler, right, or a retailer. Obtains a cannabinoid product from a wholesaler or a retailer that holds a license, OLCC license. So right now the path is through caregivers and medical marijuana patients. The path that we're trying to figure out here is for non-patients, non-card holders.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Okay, Pete, you're on.
Thank you.
Closing the show. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon. My name is Peter Kramer. I'm a concerned citizen. I'm with the Mercy Center. I've been with this for many a generations, many a times I've been here. My concern is for the patients, how they're being treated. Like Dal mentioned, how about Section 20 of our state constitution? Everybody should be treated equally. I've gave you my testimony several times, but nobody's got back in touch with me. I'm here to help if I can. I filmed this so the public can see it on the CCTV. We try and help the patient. It's only a plant. And we shouldn't be being taxed and not representative. I mean, you're going to have a committee, and you're only going to have one medical patient on the committee. Would that be fair? Thank you for listening. I appreciate you all talking about the cannabis and how we can help people. Remember the patient. They need your help.
Thank you, Pete. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a good Friday.
Okay. Committee, that completes our business for tonight. We will be scheduling work sessions next week on Senate Bill 1015, 2198, House Bill 2198, and we'll see how if we're able to on Senate Bill 56. So with that, do you have any other announcements, Madam Co-Chair? Okay, with that, we are adjourned.